This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Hey, if you're listening to this, I will assume you're at least interested in money, understanding the economy and finances as well. And some of us now want to get the next generation interested as well. So check out Million Bazillion, Marketplace's award-winning kids podcast that breaks down money to help dollars make more sense. Tune into Million Bazillion wherever you find your favorite podcasts. A whole new season is out now. Million Bazillion is presented in partnership with Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Greenlight helps kids and teens learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. Get 1 month free and an extra $10 when you sign up for a Greenlight account at greenlight.com/million. You know what's cool? When you can roll the bond market and history and the future of this economy all into one story. Well, I think it's cool. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdal. It is Tuesday, today the 23rd day of February. Good, as always, to have you along, everybody. We direct your attention today to the Full Employment and Balanced Growth Act of 1978. And we do that because Section 108 of that law requires the Federal Reserve prepare twice a year a report on the monetary policy of the United States. And it, well, shall we say, invites the Fed chair to come on up to Capitol Hill twice a year and answer questions. And so we found ourselves today with Fed Chair Jay Powell on the virtual hot seat talking pandemic, talking fiscal relief, that is, aid to this economy, and interestingly, the bond market. The bond market bit stuck out to us because, as we have said, I think, but not all that recently, you want to know where this economy's going, forget stocks, and check out bonds. And lo and behold, the yield on the benchmark 10-year Treasury sits at about 1.35%, the highest it has been in a year. Still infinitesimally low, but the highest it's been in a year. And to which Jay Powell today said this.
In a way, it's a statement of confidence on the part of markets that we will have a robust and ultimately complete recovery.
Huh. Marketplace's Sabri Benishore explains what's going on.
Investors are basically saying, if you want me to lock my money up in a bond for the next 10 years, you're going to have to sweeten the deal. And they're saying that because they see some things that might mess with the deal, some things that might cost them some profit. Rick Reeder is chief investment officer for fixed income at BlackRock.
The first thing that's driving rates is originally it was the anticipation of significantly higher levels of inflation.
Inflation eats away at investment returns. So returns have to rise to make up for it. And that's what's happening with bonds. Investors are looking at a rebounding economy and thinking inflation's going to pick up. Now, the Fed has pushed back on that even today, when Thin is global head of currency strategy at Brown Brothers Harriman.
The main source of underlying inflation typically comes from the labor market, that is wages. And, you know, we've got 10 million people out of work, you know, 20 plus million collecting unemployment benefits. There's literally no wage pressure right now.
But there is still something else pushing up bond yields. Matthew Luzzetti is chief U.S. economist at Deutsche Bank.
The recent moves is being driven by optimism or rising expectations of further fiscal stimulus in the near term.
So investors are thinking, we are going to actually get a big stimulus, and maybe it'll actually work. Maybe it'll work so well that the economy will grow so fast that the Fed might have to step in sooner to cool things down eventually.
Investors have been building in expectations that the Fed will raise rates even a little bit more aggressively than previously.
Now, when bond rates go up quickly like this, it can cause some minor freakouts over on the stock market just because now all of a sudden stocks don't look as good. We saw that in the past few days. But if you take a step back, these numbers from the bond market tell a story about the pace of recovery. Again, Rick Reeder at BlackRock.
A big thing has been the realization that the economy is coming back very quickly in the anticipation that vaccine is creating significant ability for the economy to reopen.
And that's good news for everyone, not just the bond market. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore for Marketplace.
Interesting tidbit about the Full Employment and Balanced Growth Act of 1978, by the way, sometimes known as the Humphrey-Hawkins Act. You know how we talk about the Fed's dual mandate a lot, full employment and stable prices? That law is where it comes from. So now you know. Wall Street today, they really didn't know much. The major indices bounced around all over the place. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. The Democrats' big relief bill continues to make its slow but steady way through the House. It's going to pass Friday, maybe Saturday. There is a bunch of stuff in it, a proposed boost to the minimum wage. Told you about that yesterday. Also, some tax policy changes geared to low-income workers. Marketplace's Kimberly Adams has that one.
This version of the relief bill would boost the earned income tax credit, which reduces the tax bill or increases the refund for many low-income workers, mostly for those who live with kids. This bill would expand that to include more childless workers. Elaine Mogg is a principal research associate at the Urban Institute.
And the types of industries that people are in that would benefit the most from this policy change are those industries that have been most hard hit during the recent recession, food service, and accommodations.
The credit typically has bipartisan support. Mogg says some of those affected by the change could see their benefit triple from a max of about $500 to $1,500. Sam Washington is with the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities.
So the earned income tax credit expansion would benefit, we estimate, 17 million people overall, and that includes the 5.8 million childless workers.
The changes would also include more older workers by removing the age cap of 65. The bill only seeks to change the rules for this year, meaning the credit would show up on next year's returns. Erica York is an economist at the Tax Foundation.
But oftentimes, if something gets its foot in the door of the tax code, it doesn't go away. It gets extended, it gets debated, and eventually becomes more of a permanent policy.
This round of COVID relief legislation also includes an expansion of the child tax credit, which some economists say could lift millions of children out of poverty. I'll have more on that tomorrow. In Washington, I'm Kimberly Adams for Marketplace.
Tell you what, this was a busy day on Capitol Hill. There was the Jay Powell testimony. There was a hearing into the events of January 6th and a hearing in the House on what is up with the vaccine supply chain. You know, oftentimes when a bunch of CEOs spend time in front of a Congressional Investigations Committee, it's not great news, right? There's a scandal or something's amiss. Today, though, those pharmaceutical CEOs said one by one that the state of virus vaccine production in this economy is strong. And that after months of supply chain challenges, they will meet their targets by the summertime. Marketplace's Scott Tong reports now from Washington on where the bottlenecks appear to have been cleared and where they haven't.
In vaccine making, one of the key bottlenecks is the bottles. The vials that contain the drugs have to be filled, and that can only go so fast, says Clem Lewin. He's an independent vaccine consultant.
It's simply the throughput of finding these facilities that are able to fill. You need to qualify them because these are highly regulated products where safety is critical.
But he says drug makers that normally compete are now actually helping each other. For instance, Sanofi, whose vaccine is not yet ready for production, is filling vials for Pfizer, as is Novartis. Perhaps they feel they have to. Anna Nagurny studies supply chains at the University of Massachusetts Amherst.
There is some discussion that they're kind of reluctant But I think sooner or later, if they're promising, you know, to double the capacity, you have to keep your promises.
She says another efficiency gain is Moderna's plan to squeeze 15 doses into a vial instead of 10. But not every challenge has been solved. Healthcare supply chain fellow Prashant Yadav at the Center for Global Development says the Moderna and the Pfizer vaccines require special compounds called lipids.
We had never imagined that we were going to need these lipid nanoparticles in the quantities that we now need them, which means there are very few suppliers in the world, one or two.
Vaccine makers say they found new lipid supplies. But Derek Lowe, a drug researcher, says companies are often vague about the details because supply chains are secret.
If you've got a line on some really good material, you don't want everyone else to know about that.
Two more doses of good news. Johnson & Johnson expects vaccine authorization any day, and the Novavax version is assumed to be close behind. In Washington, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
There you are, early in the morning, wondering where you are going to get your business and economic news. Might I recommend the Marketplace Morning Report? David Brancaccio and the gang getting out of bed to tell you what you need to know. Power's back on in most of Texas. Boil water notices are slowly being lifted. That said, a good chunk of the Texas Electrical Reliability Council announced their resignations today, and life is still very far from normal. People are dealing with burst pipes and water damage, and as Marketplace's Samantha Fields reports, businesses are too.
This time of year is usually when everything starts to bloom at Gretchen O'Neill's flower farm in Manor, Texas.
It is supposed to be spring here. It is supposed to be warm.
So when O'Neill heard the forecast for snow and freezing temperatures last week, she did everything she could to save the flowers in her greenhouses.
I spent about $4,000 and brought in a generator and kerosene heaters, extra row cover.
That saved most of those flowers. But the ones outside, in the fields, many of them were damaged or destroyed during Valentine's week, a huge revenue week for her. The timing was terrible for Ashley Frick, too. She owns Colleen's Kitchen, a restaurant in Austin.
Takes a lot of resources and funds to prepare for those big days.
Instead of letting that food go to waste, Frick says, Colleen's partnered with a local nonprofit and other restaurants.
We were able to feed different shelters around town where, I mean, it's hard to be focused on your business when you're also delivering food to people that have absolutely nothing.
Many Texans have stepped up to help struggling businesses, too. Becky Hume lost almost all of her spring crop at Verdant Farms in Bastrop, Texas, which means for the next month, at least, she won't be able to deliver the shares of vegetables that her CSA members had paid for. But when she emailed to tell them,
so many of them, you know, understood the problem that I had, you know, just such a steep fall of revenue that they have stepped up and said, yes, we want to help you get across this.
Enough people, Hume says, that she can afford to keep all of her staff and replant things like radishes and arugula that should, with a little luck, be ready in about a month. I'm Samantha Fields for Marketplace.
Coming up.
It created a math problem for us.
Business, like math, can be a numbers game. Speaking of which, shall we? Dow Industrials up 15 points today, less than a tenth percent, ended at 31,537. The NASDAQ down 67 points, about a half percent, 13,465 for the NASDAQ. The S&P 500, 4 points to the good, about a tenth percent, 38.81. Home Depot dropped 3.1% today, despite posting better than expected revenue and earnings for the fourth quarter. Home improvement retailer didn't provide guidance for the coming year, though, because of uncertainty about the virus, yes. Macy's gained 3.9% on fourth quarter profit and revenue that beat expectations. The company noted a 21% increase in its digital sales. Kohl's slipped 0.3%. A new study in the Journal of the American Medical Association says last year was a bad one for mental health. I think we all kind of knew that. 30% of respondents reported trauma or stress related to the virus, and 33% reported symptoms of anxiety or depression. One co-author of the study said stress factors include food or housing insecurity and lack of a job. You're listening to Marketplace.
Looking for the highest interest rate on your cash? At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's a higher rate than Robinhood, a higher rate than SoFi, a higher rate than Marcus, a higher rate than Wealthfront, frankly, a higher rate than Capital One, a higher rate than Ally, a higher rate than Barclays, a way higher rate than Bank of America and Chase, a higher rate than Citi, Wells Fargo, Discover, and it's a higher rate than American Express, too. So if you want to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash, check out public.com. We can't say it's the highest interest rate, but it's pretty darn up there. This is paid for by Public Investing, 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. So, inflation. We've been talking about it a lot lately because people have been talking about it a lot lately, up to and including Jay Powell up on Capitol Hill today, as Sabri was telling us earlier. And look, reasonable people can disagree on whether inflation's going to happen, what with all the relief money that's hitting this economy. But the reality is that it's been a long time since inflation has been a thing here. So a couple of minutes now, by way of refresher. What might it look like if inflation does actually become a thing? And more to the point, why it matters.
Currently, most industrial economies are trying to accomplish inflation rates in the neighborhood of 2%.
That's Fabio Gironi. He's a professor of economics at the University of Washington, joined here by Julie Smith at Lafayette and Abdu Anjai at NYU Stern.
2% inflation rate means that they see prices rising, but there isn't sort of any sticker shock that comes when you maybe go to the grocery store or you are thinking about buying a house or buying a car.
It means essentially that prices will double in 35 years, which is a pretty long period of time to see the price of bread doubling, for example.
So that's inflation right where the Fed wants it to be, 2% give or take. And one is obliged to point out here that inflation hasn't gone much above that in more than a decade, and it's been even longer since it stayed above that. But what if it did, say, 4%?
So if inflation rises, say, from 2% to 4%, the first thing that you're going to see is when you go to the grocery store, those prices over the course of the year are going to rise more rapidly.
If you had started with a $10 haircut, well, your haircut is now going to cost $10.40.
It would be equivalent here, prices doubling every 17 to 18 years. And if the wages do not catch up, it can be a loss in quality of life.
Prices doubling in 18 years instead of 35? Yeah, people would notice that. Oh, and one more thing, too. If money is getting less valuable over time, which is another way to think about inflation, then the cost of borrowing money goes up.
So if we think about borrowing for a house for 10 or 20 or 30 years, those costs are all going to rise as well.
Now, just as a thought experiment, since we're kind of playing around here, what if inflation got really hot?
Let's go to, like, in the 1970s of 9%, 10%, that would have a substantial effect on what people can buy.
And you would see that at the pump, when you go fill the tank, you would see it in restaurants.
And maybe if you're a business, well, you go out and you hire an economic consultant to help you forecast inflation.
There was a point back in the great inflation of the 1970s, think Paul Volcker and interest rates at 20%. There was a point where some restaurants were updating their menus with stickers because they were going up so fast.
It just gets more difficult to make economic decisions.
Decisions like buying a car or starting a new business. That gets tricky when prices are bouncing all over the place. And that is the answer to the why all of this matters question. But remember, inflation like that is a long, long ways away. Over the past 12 months, it's only 1.4% inflation is. Central bankers, though, have long memories. And the 1970s, for them, wasn't that long ago. So because there has objectively been a huge amount of money added to this economy in a short period of time, with more on the way, inflation is in the air in the relief bill debate.
Even the people who are on the same camp are discussing, is it too big, too small?
I see myself in the camp of those who are in favor of the $1.9 trillion effort. I think the Federal Reserve and the team at the Treasury, I trust them as guarantees of the fact we're not going to see an explosion in inflation or a debt crisis.
I think that the Fed is great at having learned from the mistakes that we've made in the past. And the issue that arises is always that the next challenge is somewhat different and to be more forward-looking and try to figure out what those challenges are.
So here's the calculation that both the Federal Reserve and the Biden administration are making right now, that the risk of inflation getting out of hand is lower than the risk of long-term damage to this economy of 10 million people being out of work. And yes, it is a calculated risk. Thanks again to Abdu Najai at NYU Stern, Fabio Gironi at the University of Washington, also Julie Smith at Lafayette. Might have seen the other day that the Biden administration's tweaking the rules on the latest round of the Paycheck Protection Program. Starting tomorrow and for the next 2 weeks, only companies with less than 20 employees are going to be allowed to apply. One of the other rules that's different this time around is that companies can only apply if their revenue has dropped 25% over the past year. And the thing is, that could cut out some businesses that could really use the support, as Marketplace's Justin Ho explains.
When Danielle Vogel founded Glenn's Garden Market, a grocery store in Washington, D.C., she designed her business as a three-legged stool. First, she'd sell food, grocery staples, local foods. Second, she'd run a craft beer bar. And third, she'd have a prepared food section with brunch items, sandwiches, and pizza.
And that three-part concept was absolutely integral to the financial picture.
That's because she could sell the beer and prepared food at more of a markup than she could the groceries. But when the pandemic started, her deli sales fell by half, and she had to shut down her craft beer bar.
So when the COVID regulations started to shut down substantial lines of business, it created a math problem for us that became nearly insurmountable.
Even though people were spending more on groceries, toilet paper, dry yeast, packaged foods, and the average ticket price at checkout rose 83%,
that doesn't seem like we're doing that badly until you understand the nuance of the fact that the sales that we lost were the sales that paid our bills.
In other words, she wasn't selling the beers and prepared food that allowed her to cover most of her costs.
We're paying our staff a minimum of $17 an hour. We're providing subsidized healthcare. We're providing free daily meals to everyone that works at Glenn's. You know, and we made a number of investments in our team to keep everyone safe and well.
Overall, the store's revenue fell by just 8% last year, which means it doesn't qualify for this round of the Paycheck Protection Program. Around November, Vogel started having conversations about whether Glenn's Garden Market could survive through January with her accountant, Matt Hetrick.
You know, looking at your burn rate, we need to be thinking about what that means. So we had conversations where it was, you know, along the lines of like, we're done.
Quite a few small businesses have found themselves in this predicament, says Dominic Miartan, CEO of Optus Bank in South Carolina.
You know, you lose even 10% of revenues and you cannot downsize your fixed costs.
that could be devastating.
Mjartan says the revenue requirement for this round of PPP loans could explain why fewer businesses have been applying.
We had several customers that reached out to us, wanted to apply, did experience a pretty significant revenue shortfall, but they just didn't make the 25% cut.
And that means government aid isn't reaching some of the small businesses that need the help, says DDA Trent with the small business advocacy group Main Street Alliance.
Grocery stores employ essential workers and must stay open to provide needed services to the community.
A different government relief package ended up helping Danielle Vogel keep Glen's Garden Market open. It's called the Employee Retention Tax Credit,
which fundamentally changed the math problem for us.
By giving the store a tax credit for every employee it's kept on the payroll.
And so essentially, the government is subsidizing my payroll to a tune of, it'll end up being close to 70% between now and July 1st.
Her accountant, Matt Hetrick, says the credit could help a lot of smaller businesses meet the cost of staying open and paying their employees. I'm Justin Ho for Marketplace.
This final note on the way out today, meant to get this in the numbers yesterday, but ran out of time. Royal Caribbean, the cruise line, says bookings for this year and next are strong. And this is the part that stumped me, with prices higher on average than in 2019. That's after a pandemic, the early days of which were all about cruise ships, if you remember that. But I guess when you want to get away, you want to get away. All right, we got to go, but here is your Tuesday moment of economic context, a quick follow to Amy Scott's story yesterday about rising mortgage rates. One effect of rising rates might be eventually that it puts a pause on rising home prices, but clearly not yet. The benchmark Case-Shiller National Home Price Index came out today. Home prices, of course, in major metropolitan areas, up 10.4% for the year ended in December. And perhaps this is related, I don't know. There were 23% fewer homes for sale at the end of last year than there were at the end of 2019. I'm just kidding. They are related. I knew that. Our digital and on-demand team includes Ufukme Matolu, Olga Oxman, Erica Phillips, Brian Ronahan, and Tony Wagner. Sitar Nieves is our executive director of on-demand. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.